in a loving romantic relationship, boundaries can feel contentious because it feels like we're keeping away. But we need to understand that boundaries are longevity. They give our relationships form and function.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
18 summers. We are here talking with Kelly Clements today. Kelly is a great friend for a number of years, and it's been a while since we've caught up. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so good to be with you guys.
Yeah. So what has been keeping you busy? I mean, we know, but you have a pretty important message that you're getting out right now that obviously is going to resonate with our community. And you've been a part of our community for a long time. So I'm pretty excited for this episode.
Thank you.
Relationships, right?
Yep.
Yes. This is my second book. It's actually two books in one. There's two parts of it. And the first one addresses like an entrepreneurial relationship framework. And the reason I did this is because a lot of times there's this underlying belief or energy current among entrepreneurial couples. And for lack of a better term, it's kind of like a power struggle. If the entrepreneur has a very strong alpha personality, often it leaves the spouse feeling like he or she just takes the beta role, and it's easier to keep the peace and go along to get along. And sometimes a spouse, if they're not careful, can lose their identity to the entrepreneur. And so the first part of this book talks about a new framework. So instead of having an alpha beta dynamic where the alpha is the leader and the beta just kind of follows or obliges, this introduces an alpha omega framework. And the omega is extraordinary in his or her own right. They hold his or her own identity strongly. And so they can run life truly as if it's a three-legged race where one isn't getting sucked into the gravitational pull of the other. And so it offers the spectrum of alpha. Anytime we take our strengths too far, it can become a weakness. And so it offers a spectrum of alpha to make sure that the entrepreneur, the leader, isn't taking their leadership too far where they become dictatorial or control freaks. It also offers a spectrum of beta. So spouses can find if they're secure and supportive and confident in their role as a supportive spouse, or if they've taken their support too far and have become like a shell of their former self because they've been consumed by alpha. So it helps couples navigate where they might fall on that spectrum. And then it introduces this whole new concept of what an omega partner might look like, which is basically two extraordinary people creating one extraordinary relationship.
I love that. I think that's really cool. And that was something that when we first entered into our relationship for the beginning number of years, I would often say to him, I'm like, I kind of feel like I'm in your shadow. Like, you have a bigger personality. You enjoy walking into a room and hitting up all the people. Like, even though I know I'm strong and I know I have this capability, I carry it differently. So it may feel as though it's a shadow. And to put it into those terms of omega also sounds equally as wonderful.
Yeah, so I love that concept. I have not heard that word used. I mean, I know the word in this context. I
love that.
But I love what you said too in the beginning. Jamie and I actually had a conversation about this a few weeks ago. And honestly, Kelly, I remember when we were first starting to do the family education and people would say, and I thought, oh, they refer to someone and say, oh, that's a power couple. Mm-hmm. And Jamie and I, we decided something like, gosh, we love impacting families, but we don't want to be a power couple because there's normally means there's power struggles. So we're like, we don't want that. We work together, hand in hand, synergize, collaborate, but a power couple, that seemed like we were almost like the top two contenders in something. And is that what you see a lot? I mean, you've worked with strategic coach, you've worked through your own endeavors with lots of consulting clients. What is the biggest mistake you see? Is it that, or is it just the entrepreneur just being just a complete overshadower?
It's both, but a lot of times what I see, and I talk about this as the ambition gap. So if there's one alpha or entrepreneur that's like hyper alpha, and he's or she is on that dictatorial, consuming, control freak end of the spectrum, and the spouse isn't, like, that creates a huge ambition gap. And a lot of times the alpha, or like the more dominant partner, mistakenly believes, like, if I was with somebody who matched my ambition and had as much drive as me, like, we could take on the world and like we'd be that true power couple. And they believe if their spouse just had more ambition and more drive, they could take on the world together. And to your point, that's not always true, because what happens is two alphas get together and it is explosive and intoxicating at first. until visions start to diverge. And because that's what an alpha is, it enrolls others into their vision. And it's very empowering in the right, like, harness energy. But when it's not governed and it's like, we want to like bring everybody into our vision, as soon as those visions have a little bit of separation, now there are actually power struggles and it becomes competitive in an unhealthy sense. So competition, when it's driving both partners to become better and there is true synergy, it's super healthy. But when it becomes toe to toe in a loving, like a love relationship, then it becomes toxic. And so that is one of the dynamics that I see is when an entrepreneur will want to make his spouse or her spouse an entrepreneur. So it's like the spouse is like, I'd love to get into pottery. And the entrepreneur is like, oh my God, yes, you have such a great skill. And we can open a shop and we can start to sell it to all these other stores. And they go straight to the whiteboard and they're like wanting to monetize it. And the spouse is like, I don't even know why I said anything. Like, I just wanted a hobby that's my own. So that's one of the mistakes in the dynamics that I often see.
Kelly, how do you know this so well? Is this just lots of practice? Do you have any personal experience?
Both. So I started working at Strategic Coach. And when I was working there, I was 25. I was like in the wedding season of my life where every weekend was like a bridesmaid or I was a newlywed myself. And when I was working at Strategic Coach, and it may have been just the season of life that I was in with all of these weddings, but I just noticed there was a way that my clients who talked about their spouses as if their spouse or their marriage was their greatest asset, they were just hitting higher levels of holistic success easier and faster versus those clients that had marital strife or were single or just had like a different level of unhappiness. So I always had a special attention on the role of the spouse. And I know now, and this is the first time I've ever said this out loud. Normally what I would say is I would come home from work and I would talk to my then husband about wanting to start a business together. I was doing to him what I talk about now, like, let's go to the whiteboard. Let's do this together. And after a couple of years, he said to me, why do you always need more? Why can't this just be enough? And that started our ambition gap. And so normally when I talk about this, I talk about it in like, I judged his contentment or I was too critical. But what I know now is I was really looking for ways that I felt more in my feminine. I was looking at my clients talking about their spouses and wives and being like, God, that must be so amazing to be like the supportive, life-giving partner. And so in my next relationship, I was with that equal alpha, equally weird, equally driven, equally ambitious. And again, like I said, in the beginning, total chemistry and so creative. And like, we just kept creating more and more and more together until we didn't, because I was in that relationship where I got to be in my feminine and I took it way to the other end of the spectrum. So I went way supportive and I ended up losing myself. And I didn't even realize it because it's such a slow fade. It's one decision. It's one compromise at a time until you're so far away from yourself. You're exhausted. You're depleted. And he looked at me and he said, where's Kelly? Where's that woman I fell in love with? What happened to that woman? And I was like, I'm on the floor waiting for the crumbs of your attention to fall. And it was right then that I realized like, he didn't take that from me. I gave it to him. And so I think my business background with Strategic Coach and Lifebook and Colby and Dream Manager, there's so many programs that I've coached and I've seen this pattern on repeat. But it was really going through it myself where I can really relate to both ends of the spectrum with both spouses. So both the entrepreneur and the spouse truly feel like I'm in their corner. And I am, because I know this dynamic. And so that it took me like that pendulum going from one extreme to the other and then finally landing in the middle that helps me like bake out this omega concept.
How do people, because that's really powerful. So I want to make sure we look at this, and I appreciate you sharing.
Thank you for sharing that. That was my next question, actually. Can you be more than one role? Like, can you change? And I love your idea of that pendulum or the spectrum. So I really appreciate that. Like, it's very valid.
Very powerful. Thank you. It's thought-provoking on this, because right away I go to, and I'm sure a lot of people listening do, you said, I couldn't even see it happening. It was just one small shed away at a time. Now, with your knowledge of looking back with the wiser self of Kelly, how do you help people identify that? You're like, I couldn't see it. A lot of other people couldn't. Well, how are you helping people be able to start identifying? Because I never want that to happen to Jamie or I, but look, we're human. We know it could. So yeah. I always want to be on the spectrum of how do we make ourselves aware of that type of thing?
There's a difference between accommodating and acquiescing. And all relationships require accommodating. We always have to make accommodations in ourselves to accommodate our partner. But where I want people to get really focused is needs versus desires. And so often I'll see beta, generally this is women, although there's plenty of exceptions to this rule, where we will accommodate because we're celebrated for being selfless. And so we'll override our needs for our people's desires. And when we start to do that, like they want to do this, like they want to go out, but I need to sleep. So I'll just like power through and keep going out. So we override our own needs to accommodate their desires. And the second we do that, we betray ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the second we betray ourselves, it teaches our people that our needs don't matter. And so it's really, really getting good and comfortable and falling in love with the idea of boundaries. And in a loving romantic relationship, boundaries can feel contentious because it feels like we're keeping away. But we need to understand that boundaries are longevity. They give our relationships form and function. No different than a mug, right? Like if I have this mug and I pour water in it, now I have form and function. If I have no mug, no boundaries, I have a mess.
I love that. That's I remember we were talking about, someone taught us what you call the mug. Also, imagine if you're walking across one of those wooden bridges, the small little ones across a ravine. Well, on the side, you have those guardrails, right? Those rope guardrails. You want those. They're to offend you. They're there to protect you. Yes. And that's been a big aha for Jamie and I.
And I think too, like to be equally as vulnerable, I think it is hard because I'm more on that supportive role, even though I'm also an entrepreneur but I am more in the home and in the business less. He's in the business more, and we're equally in all parts of our life. However, we have to show up in different quantities. But I have a tendency to, if things are thick, I'm going to jump and I'm going to do it. And sometimes those needs versus desires, and what I always see in myself is like I have an awareness of it. And so then it bubbles. And then I tend to, instead of getting smaller, I'm like, whoa, it like builds up and makes me say, because I'm hurt now. And I'm like, I'm only wanted if I'm useful, or my value is in my doing. We had this conversation just the other day. I was like, I feel like I'm only whatever when I'm useful. And it like, because my feelings were hurt and it wasn't the truth. I was just as accepted or loved, or when I stepped away for a moment to take a breath, which I then did went consecutive after that moment. But sometimes you just feel it because boundaries are new to me, or because taking care of myself is new to me. And I say new a decade now, decade plus now, but still that's new.
You used to be very against doing something for yourself.
Right.
All about everyone else. And I was like,
but it's nice when you can recognize the way it feels. You know, we try to so hard to teach our children, like, how did you feel right before you lost your shit? How did you,
yeah, right.
You manage this.
Yeah, so those triggers, like what's the straw that breaks the camel?
Yeah. And so it's interesting to see that, the way in which you explain that, just to give a super direct example. Thank you.
I think that doing this, it's interesting because I see two addictions in entrepreneurial marriages, and it's not addictions that we're used to talking about. It's like the addiction to please or accommodate or prove our worth, and the addiction of success. And so now you have like one person like addicted to work to like prove his or her worthiness and accomplishments. And we have this noble addiction of workaholism, and then this other equally noble addiction of serving and helping. And it's like two people have like pulled away from themselves to go into their addictions of achievement and support. And so it's natural to feel that natural pulling away, and like, we're not connected. Everything looks good and it seems like it's good from the outside, but something's not lining up on the inside.
And how do you bridge that? How do you bridge the over-accommodator with the overachiever? Like, what's the best way to bridge that?
Well, it's getting to why that facade is there in the first place. Like, what is this facade actually protecting? And now we get into a vulnerability conversation. Most entrepreneurs are driven initially by an insecurity. We're working to overcome something, whether it was a scarcity childhood or some kind of traumatic event. Like, we've just found a really healthy way to channel all of that mania. And so when we can get to a place where it's like, okay, we've created stable ground now, and there's still something stirring, like now it's time to do the work. And so it's creating a really safe space for my clients to get in touch with what that was that drove them, and helping them understand that now they can create from a place of peace. Because a lot of times, especially if it's the drive to overachieve, it's like, well, I don't want to heal that because this is why I'm successful. And if I heal this wound, I'm not going to be successful anymore. And it's like, when they can get to the place where they start to feel like, but now I can create out of true creativity instead of defensiveness or provingness. Like, that's a moonshot when you're creating from a more energetic space and you have that synergy with your partner.
Yeah.
It's getting behind the thought. So
I love how you're almost like the mediator, because we had to figure this out on our own. In the last 5 years, a big aha for me was my parents went broke when I was in fifth grade. I've talked about this before. I watched my father struggle with money his entire life, right up until the end. The only time he had refuge from financial troubles is when Jamie and I stepped in, were able to happily give that to him for the last part of his life. And I would say in the strong moments, like, I'm not going to be able to provide like my father. And I love my dad, but he struggled financially. And it was this fear. And Jamie had to talk me off the ledge.
And she would use that as defense as to why you're working so hard.
Yeah.
Why you're not as available.
It was kind of dirty.
You did better than my parents. Like, you use these crutches that you built for.
I call it dirty fuel in the tank.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very clean fuel. And I've seen in the last 5 years correct me if I'm wrong, it's okay, live, but I've had a better trajectory and better results because I'm kind of changing the fuel in the tank.
Yes.
And that's been really important. And Jamie and I had to feel our way through that. And then we all bring something forward, I think, from younger years. I know Jamie had unknowns in her younger years. And so we had to work through that. But mine was really that scarcity, like Kelly talked about, for sure.
Yeah. And it's noble. It's a noble thing to want to provide for your family until it's not. And that's getting my clients to the space where they like, oh my God, there's so much peace here. There's so much relief here. And I'm still successful. And my marriage is better. Like, that's my favorite part of the process.
That's so cool. And now, Kelly, is it okay if we talk about your blended family that you have going on?
For sure.
We definitely, when there was like a Facebook post that I would say maybe it was the first time you posted a picture with you and Joe. So I was like, look, and we're looking, we're trying to figure out
who you were stalking, Kelly, not me.
And I was informing you, I was letting you know how it was going. We've always loved you guys, but I think it's awesome when people have wins and are happy. And that was really cool to see. So you've brought so much into this, and now this great awareness with you and Joe. And now, how is that dynamic working? What is new and exciting and well there?
It's home. It feels like home. And part of it is we grew up together. His mom was my principal and we went to the same elementary school. So we kind of started on the 60-yard line because we have shared so many of the same players from our childhood. But it's just so comfortable. And most of it's because of the work in myself, because I have a very strong personality and it's very easy for me to get into bulldozer mode. And so I know, like, when I start to get there, like, how I have to back off, let him step up and be the man and like receive his support, his protection. It's really, really good. And it's so great having a man in the house right now with where my boys are coming into their teens. I think if I was still doing this alone, I would be a complete wreck, but it's just really, really good. And I've held it close. I used to be very active on social, and I don't know if it's a function of the relationship or everything that happened with COVID, where I just went like, nope, I'm going to be with my people. And it's just so easy and healthy and fun. It's so much fun. It's just home.
And you guys are able to model that for the three children that you've blended into the fold as well. And I know that you say holding it close from social media, but you're not holding it close from your family. No doubt they're seeing the difference in how you're talking in this book you're working on, the things that you're bringing into the world that they're able to learn from.
The other day, we were out in the boat and Will was like, Mom, everything is different about our life. We have a different house. We got a dog. Like, you used to not want ever want a dog. And we have a dog and boats and Pan Ams. Like, there's just so much fun. It's just so different. And so it was a complete moonshot. And I knew that. I knew the next level in my business was going to be like letting myself embody what I've been teaching, because I was resisting it. Like, my boy started getting to an age where I'm like, it's just weird if I date now. Like, they're starting to date. And like, it's just weird. I'm just going to wait till they're out of high school. And I had a defining moment going into like the actually New Year's going into 2020. Like, it's time. It's just time. Yeah.
What would you say is the biggest phantom? I wrote one of probably the most shared writings I ever did is called The Second Place Myth of Adoption. Because when I adopted our two older boys, I was told the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which no one wanted to talk about because it didn't light. Yeah, oh, that's great. You adopted kids, but they're not your own. You won't love them the same as much as your biological. Which
when we were pregnant with Maggie, they said,
oh, you're fine.
Just wait till you hold her. It'll be so different.
So that's actually what sparked this. It was just this phantom that I believed in. And I don't think people were meaning to be unkind, but this is just what they believed. And I laughed at him. I was able to laugh at this. Now it's such a different, yeah.
When Maggie was born, he literally got Maggie and he was like, it's no different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh.
And I kind of laughed because you always say the big scary monster, you pull the mask off and it's this just nothing. And yeah. So did you have a phantom? Because a lot of people might be in this situation. What was your phantom that you can now laugh at? I can't believe I bought into that crap.
Okay. My phantom was that you could only be super bonded with your first husband that you had kids with. It actually happened during Lifebook. I was going through my divorce and I was like seeing like all like how to create this epic relationship and like these family legacies. And I was like, I'll never have that. Like the person that I had kids with, like, I'm not going to do life with. So like, I'll only ever have like a super diluted version of that. Cause it was John and Missy, which I know you guys and probably many of your community are familiar with. And I was just watching them and their kids. And I was like, well, I'll never have that. And like 3 days later, I was out with some of the Lifebook people and they happened to mention that John and Missy were a second marriage. And I was like, what? And I grabbed the guy's collar and I'm like, tell me everything. Like, what do you mean? And they're like, no, they're not. And he started going through all these other couples. He's like, these are all second marriages. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, thank God. Like, it is available. And I think it's because we know the loss. Like, we know what doesn't work. We know our own shadows. We know what we want and won't tolerate in relationships. And it was like, oh my God. That's this is great. Possible. So that was my biggest phantom, was that I was never going to have that legacy of a family. And then seeing all like these powerful models that were second or even third marriages.
Wow.
And set you up to now you know that yours is possible. And how cool that when you get expanded to know what's possible, you like know that you can do that. Like, I don't know. I just think it's crazy.
Do you ever get imposter syndrome? Because we're talking about never perfect family, no perfect marriage. We get in an argument or we feel we don't handle something well.
It's like, I can't teach.
How can I teach people? Do you ever get like that? And how do you get through it? Because you're in a really important role, which I'm glad you're doing, but I'm sure you get that. How do you overcome that?
Joe and I love imperfection. Like when we were remodeling the house, like the designer was like, found this like really perfect mantle. And we were like, no way. We want like the gnarly rotted wood. Like we love the mess. We love the imperfection. And so I don't get imposter syndrome in my relationship because I'm not about having a perfect relationship. I'm about having like a messy, honest, true relationship, like where we just keep finding all the parts. So I don't get it in my relationship. I get it like in my peer group, because my life is at baseball parks and at a lake in small town Illinois. And like, it's just like a very accessible, easy, fun life. And in my professional life, in like strategic coach workshop or in Genius Network, and there's like these big, huge lies all around, I feel like the spectrum of my life covers humongous territory. Like last week, I was in a room with Gino Wickman and BJ Fogg and Chris Voss. And I'm like, what am I doing here? And I just totally shut down because I'm like, it's such a huge spectrum. And I'm able to take all of that and bring it back to my people. And so I get imposter syndrome in my professional life of like, I do not belong here. Mm-hmm. And that was part of my challenge with dating, like finding somebody, because I kept gravitating towards people in my professional life. And then I'm like, okay, here's my real life. It's kind of basic. Yeah. Like, and so it didn't match.
I love that. So important that you say that. Like, I want to pause for a second.
Because, no, yeah.
Like you said, your lifespan, I mean, it's such a spectrum. And I would say that we are as well. You always call yourself Forrest Gump because you know literally everybody. Like, we somehow stupidly fall into great relationship with people that I have no idea how we even know them and then see them like, oh, well, we share a doctor. Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy how this works. But to be with the person that you do life with is so very different than being with the person that you do business with. For us, it happens to be the same, but our work is our play.
Jamie used to say to me years and years ago, well, I'm this Waldorf educator, and I do schools now. I'm not like a hard driving female entrepreneur. And I'm like, but I want it. Like, I've been very clear on this. And I always appreciated that you didn't try to become an A personality. That's not what I was attracted to. That's not where I saw the yin and yang. And I think vice versa. So I try to force the role. You know what I mean?
If I tried to be work-like, you'd be like, yeah, no, go. And actually, when if I ever slip into that role, it's so unattractive to you. Like when I go into like, okay, and here's what we're going to do today, and we have an agenda. Like if I go into like, if I show up at an event and I'm wearing an outfit that is inauthentic to who I am, and you're like, wait, what are you doing?
But I think where the magic is, and when I hear you say that, Kelly, like Gino and the Chris bosses and that, gosh, they've taught me a lot, right? But when we stay within our genius, something I learned with you and some of the other strategic, we have a lot to offer. Like, who of those guys couldn't benefit from what you're teaching? Mm-hmm, if you were trying to teach now, if you were trying to teach what Chris teaches, like, yeah, I'm going to teach you hostage negotiation. Now, Kelly's waters, me, you, Jamie. But when you're talking about this, you have a lot to offer. And that's one of the things that I think we always have to remember in these bigger groups. Are we working within our genius? Are we trying to play a different position than we're really meant to play? And that's been a big aha. I mean, that's how we became friends.
That's through strategic, right?
Yeah, strategic, but also saying, I don't know, this family stuff, is this just kind of wonky, not deep enough? And the answer normally when you really stay with it, like I'm watching you do, we're so proud to see you doing it, is the answer is no, it's very important. And who's going to do it if you don't do it, right? That's so important.
Thank you. I'm clear on that, but it's why I'm here. So thank you for sharing that.
Now, are you still with Strategic Coach?
I'm a client now.
Oh, that's amazing. Look at that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And now are you
in my second year?
That's great. Focus solely on your books and what that's bringing into the world?
Yeah. My coaching practice is fully booked. My ceiling of complexity, where I'm looking at if I'm going to bring in junior coaches or having my own online courses, because I can't do anymore. And it's big, intense work. So after 5, 6, 8 calls a day, like sometimes by the end of the day, like knee deep in other people's marriages and other people's businesses, it's like, so I'm at the place right now where I'm at my ceiling and the conversations are happening now about who the next two is to come in and help me expand.
Wow, that's really incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how long has the book been out for? I feel like it's not been very long. As soon as you posted, I'm like, come be on the show.
Yeah. I released April 25th, I think, or 26th. And I was talking with my publisher the other day. She's like, it feels like the book is a mile behind you. It's like, you got it out and like, you're just on to the next. And I'm like, yes. She's like, hey, we need to get some energy back into it. This wasn't like a thing that you did for 1 week of sales. Like, let's ground.
Get back to it.
Yeah. So it's good to be back in touch with the content of it and sharing it with the world again on a bigger scale.
That's wonderful. And will you tell us the name of the book for our listeners?
Yeah, it's called Grow Your Business Without Growing Apart.
Wow, what a great title.
And it's at Amazon.
Yep, it's on Amazon.
Where's the best place for people to reach out to you? Obviously, you can get the book on Amazon. Where's the best place to learn more about your coaching and
like follow you anywhere?
Yeah, Instagram is where probably more of my energy is going to be going for my professional life. And my website is kellyclements.com if they want to just window shop anything else.
That's so amazing. Kelly, we always finale with our 75-year-old self. So during the pandemic, we had our own children and 2 foster children, and we started a podcast and everybody was at home. And Jim needed a moment. And in his moment, he realized, like, he heard from his higher self and it kind of said, like, hey, this is the good stuff. And so
you'll be looking back on this like, oh man, this craziness, disorder, this is the good stuff. And I said, wow, I always hear, what would I say to my 21-year-old self? We needed help to them. So we just said,
what would 75-year-old Kelly say to you or to the world about what you're working on?
It's so wild that you said that. I did my 10-minute talk for Genius Network, I think back in January, maybe, and I had a massive breakdown before it. For the imposter syndrome, like, what am I going to talk to this room about? Oh. And I mean, I just went for it on the floor crying at my friend Sheila's house. And I heard I call her my inner elder that just went, get up. I don't care who's in the room. I need you to do this work now. And it was the first time where I didn't go into an audience thinking like, I just need to make a difference for my audience. It was like, I am here to serve my inner elder, like whatever she needs me to do right now, I am here for, regardless of how this lands, but like, I'm going to show up for her big right now. And it was like such a powerful experience. And so I'm in touch with her a lot right now. Spent so much time healing our inner child. And that, like, I feel like I've been through that. And now I'm like totally in touch with my inner elder, like whatever you need me to do.
That's so cool. I haven't heard it called.
Kelly, I love that.
Yeah. You always call it 75-year-old self. You call it inner elder.
I like wrote it and circled it. I take a lot of notes during our stuff, but inner elder, that's beautiful.
Get up, show up, and do the work. I like that.
You can always love and nurture your younger self, but then you're always the lover and the nurturer. Like at what point?
Exactly.
Are you receiving it in real time? Oh, Kelly, thank you. That's awesome. Alpha Omega. Omega. I'm like, I don't want to be alpha. I want to be Omega. That sounds like a diamond. I don't know. I love it.
It's you're
like
sparkly. Be out some days on this episode. So.
Oh, Kelly, it was so good to see you. Yes, thank you for being here and sharing your wisdom that has definitely opened our eyes today. And I hope everyone goes out and gets your book because it's very important work.
Yeah. And we've worked with Kelly before. Our listeners out there, Kelly's done some guided tours for us on different subjects, quoting Colby with kids and a bunch of different things. Yeah,
that could be a whole nother episode.
Yeah, so we'll definitely get you back on because there's a lot that Kelly offers. So.
Oh, Kelly is amazing. All right, well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.